From unconsciousness to consciousness. Number 14. An Osho talk given spontaneously to an international audience in the USA. Just a few days ago, you spoke to us of three categories of belief: theist, atheist, and agnostic. What do you say about Gnostic?
I do not consider Gnostic a category of belief. The theist believes in God without knowing. Without any experience, his belief is just an escape from doubt. To remain in doubt needs tremendous courage. Not to escape from doubt is one of the fundamental qualities of a seeker. And belief is an escape. It covers up your doubt. And it gives you a sense of relief. A false confidence that you know. Although deep down you still know that you know not. So the believer is divided into two split layers. On the surface is the belief, which he thinks and projects him to be. Underneath is his reality, like a wound, the doubt, which he denies but cannot completely eradicate. It is there, part of his reality. So the believer is always in a state of conflict. He is schizophrenic. A small thing goes against his belief and the doubt comes up. A man came once to me and said that I have become a firm believer of God. I said, what do you mean by firm believer? Are there infirm believers too? The very use of the word firm shows that something inside you, you are keeping down forcibly. Firmly. But I said that we will discuss later. First, me ask, what has made you a firm believer of God? He said, I go to worship. In India, there are hundreds of temples devoted to different gods. One of the most common temple you will find, which is very funny to the outsider, it is the temple of the monkey god Hanuman. He is a monkey. But he served one of the incarnations of God, Rama, so totally. That he himself became a symbol of God. Now, it is thought that if you can persuade Hanumana, he can easily persuade Rama. And to persuade the monkey is certainly easier. And he is such a devoted servant of Rama that Rama can never say no to him. To persuade Rama directly is difficult. But Hanumana, he is just a poor monkey. Any small gift will be enough, a bribe. Few fruits, sweets, and you can ask him that help me. So this man used to go to the temple of Hanumana and he asked Hanumana that if within 15 days I don't get employed, he was unemployed. Well educated, but in India there are millions of educated people who are unemployed. There are no places for them. If within 15 days you can manage through Rama, then I am going to give a feast in your temple to 11 Brahmins. And I am going to bring fruits and sweets and flowers for you. But remember, I am passing through a very crucial moment. If within 15 days you are not able to arrange it, my belief in God will be finished. It is not only a question of employment, it is a question of my belief in God. So it is up to you. And he came to tell me that within 15 days there were so many ups and downs. One day passed, passed, another day passed, no employment, and doubt started arising, and belief was getting shaken. But on the 15th day, I received the order. I was employed. This has made me a firm believer of God. I said, your firmness is based on a very superficial thing. You try 1, 2, 3 times more. Even a scientist, before declaring his results, experiments many times. Unless he becomes absolutely convinced that this is the only result that comes, and you have not tried even twice, you try one time more. He said, now I am such a firm believer, you tell me what to try. I said, you have so many problems, I don't have to tell you. Your wife is sick. She had tuberculosis. And you have tried, and he was a poor man, could not manage, unemployed. So why don't you give another try for God? Just one chance. Ask him if within 15 days your wife is cured. Then you will do all these things again that you are going to do now. But if in 15 days the wife is not cured, then your belief in God is finished. He said, it seems worth trying. And it happened what was to happen. The wife was not cured. It was just a coincidence. What that monkey? And that too not alive, just a stone monkey, could have done. Just a coincidence. He became so angry. At me, not at his belief. I said to him, you cool down, just look at the point. I have simply helped you to see the simple fact that it was a coincidence. If it was a reality, Hanuman would have done it again. If you are not convinced, you can try once more. You can try as many times as you want. But your belief is rooted on such a stupid idea that God arranges an order to be sent to you from the employment exchange, and that too persuaded by the monkey. And now you are angry with me. For what reason? I have not done anything to you. I have simply given you another chance to check. And you have come to know now that it was coincidence. Now the doubt is there that you befooled yourself, that neither Hanuman was part in it nor Rama was part in it. You were simply befooling yourself. A belief is an escape. I told him, you are angry because I have sewed you your wound. You cannot escape from that wound so easily. And even if you escape, the wound is not going to disappear. You can turn your back towards it. That will help it to become worse. It may become a cancer. Something has to be done. Escape is not the way. Belief is an escape. The theist is pretending as if he knows. The atheist is pretending as if he also knows there is no God. Neither the theist has tried to look into existence, nor the atheist has tried. An atheist's work is even far more difficult than the theist's work, because the theist is trying to find something, its presence, its existence. At least he has a hypothesis to work upon. The atheist has no hypothesis at all. He begins with the idea there is no God. Then what you are going to search and seek for? For no God? It is difficult to have the idea of what God is. It is more difficult to have the idea of what no God is. Perhaps the theist may stumble by chance on God, but the atheist cannot stumble on no God by chance, because no God simply means something absent. You cannot stumble on something absent. The theist at least has a possibility to transform his belief in a hypothesis, that I don't believe that God exists, but hypothetically I assume as if God exists and I will try to search for him. What hypothesis the atheist can have? He is denying. Negativity cannot be the hypothesis. Positivity can be the hypothesis. The atheist is in a much more difficult situation. But he is also in another way more comfortable than the theist. The atheist cannot get rid of the doubt. It is going to remain always underneath his belief. He cannot throw it away. Belief and doubt both are two aspects of the same coin. You throw one and the other also is thrown. You save one and the other is also saved. But atheist, in another way, is more comfortable. There is no God, so there is no question of doubt. You cannot doubt in something which is not. You can doubt in something which is, or maybe. But if you have decided there is nothing like God, you cannot doubt. You cannot believe, you cannot doubt, but you cannot progress in your search either. The atheist has far deeply thrown away the doubt, far more profoundly than the theist. With the theist, the doubt is just hiding behind his belief. With the atheist, there is no belief to hide. He has thrown the doubt very far away. Very deep in the unconscious. Of course, you cannot get rid of it unless you know. But you can deceive. The atheist can deceive more easily than the theist. Hence, atheism has been growing, theism shrinking. As man has become more intelligent, more educated, more cultured, atheism has become more prominent, and theism has become something out of date. Even those who go to churches, temples, mosques, synagogues, know deep down that it is all just social conformity. It is good. They use these places just like clubs. They don't believe. They don't even bother. I have been a professor in two universities. The last university from where I left had almost 150 professors. And the common room of the professors was agog with all kinds of rumors. I remained in that university for almost 9 years, and I continued watching, listening, Does anybody starts a discussion about God? 150 professors, in which almost 7 belong to the Department of Philosophy, 5 belong to the Department of Psychology, 4 belong to the Department of Theology. At least these people. But no. Actors were discussed, actresses were discussed, films were discussed, novels were discussed, even love affairs between students were discussed, and all kinds of politics was there. You will be surprised in those 150 people. For 9 years I waited that somebody will one day ask whether God exists or not. No, nobody. And they all are Hindus, Mohammedans, Christians, Jainas. They all go to the temple, to the church. They all pay their respects, but they are all formal. It is nothing to do with their inner search. In fact, in that big common room which was meant to be for 150 people, my chair had become reserved for me. Because I was not interested in their gossips and in their politics and their love affairs and backbiting and all kinds of things. I was not interested. My chair has become nobody else's chair was permanent. My chair has become permanent. Whenever I will go, it was available for me. Nobody will sit on it. And slowly they have all taken away their chairs farther from my chair because I was not interested in their things and they were not interested in which I am interested. Whenever I will pass through the common room, they will become silent as if they were being caught like small children doing something wrong. And I will say, you continue. You don't be bothered about me. I really fail to see why you become suddenly silent as I enter the room. I avoid as much as possible to come in the room, not to become a nuisance to you people, but sometimes there is no other way. I have 2 periods and 1 period in between is empty where I can go for 40 minutes. So I have to come to sit here. You just take me for granted that I am not here. My chair is always empty. Whether I am sitting there or not, you need not bother. You continue. All kinds of neurotic things that you want to continue, you continue. You don't be afraid of me. Even my head of the department, old man, 70 years old, already retired from one university, but because he was such an authority on his subject, that this university asked him just to give a little time . He was also talking the same things. He will become silent saying, I will say, it makes me feel ashamed that a man of 70 years old has to become silent seeing me. These are the things I should be talking. You are talking, okay. At least somebody is talking. Continue. Theists are almost bogus. Atheists a little more solid. Because they have not covered their wound with a belief. If the wound is there and it hurts, they have accepted the hurt and the wound. A little more courageous and little more closer to begin the search. Because you can deceive yourself your whole life in believing and thinking that you know. But how long you can go on saying there is no God? One of my friends, a very famous Gandhian, was atheist. He said, unless I experience, there is no God. At least to me, there is no God. One day, his son, who was the Attorney General of the state, came running to me and said, my father is very, very sick. Sudden heart attack. And the doctors don't hope that he will survive. He has asked for you. I went with him. They were not very far away, just a 5-minute drive from my house. And when I entered in the room, the old man with his closed eyes was doing a Hindu japa. Rama, Rama, Rama. I was amazed. This man has been telling always there is no God. What happened? I shook him and told him, open your eyes before your heart fails. Let me ask you one question. What are you doing? Have you forgotten you are an atheist? You are not supposed to repeat the name of God. He said, I know, but at this point, when the doctors think I don't have much time left, perhaps few hours or maybe few minutes, who knows? And what is the harm lying down if I repeat Ram, Ram, Ram? If God is, at least I did come back home. If I was lost in the morning, in the evening I came back. And in India they have a saying, if you come back in the evening, you are not lost. At last you are back. And if there is no God, what is the harm in repeating Rama, Rama, Rama? I told him, this is what I have been telling you continuously for years, that you think you have got rid of the doubt. It is not possible. You have simply drowned it deep in the unconscious. Now the death has brought it up. The man survived. He is still alive. And again when he survived and became okay, again he started talking about atheism. But at least not before me. Before me he will say, man is weak, and that was a moment of weakness. I said, that was the moment which proved something immensely significant about your whole personality. That what you are talking is all bogus. That moment brought your reality, exposed you in your nudity. And it's strange, you are still trying to cover it again. And again the heart attack will come, because heart attack is not such a thing that it comes only once. And that was your first attack, remember. At least you have the possibility for three. He said, what kind of friend you are? You are telling me that I will have two heart attacks more? I said, certainly. You cannot deceive. And whom you are trying to deceive? Yourself. In the moment of death, you were deceiving yourself with the idea that who knows, if God is there, pray. If He is not there, the prayer is gone, useless, but what is the harm? You have not paid anything for it. You were being cunning even with God. And now that you are again healthy, you are back. And before me you don't talk too much, but I have heard from others that you are again talking about atheism. And let the heart attack come. And it will come to a man like you. It has to come, because only a heart attack will help. And it came. And I went to him and I told him, and he was doing his japa again. I told him, look, what are you doing now? He said, you keep quiet. Particularly when the heart attack comes, you should not come. Two heart attacks together, too much. And I said to him, remember, I have just come to remind you all that bogus philosophy that you were talking between these two heart attacks. You will be better soon. Because third attack, he said, wait, I am not finished with the second, and doctors are not hopeful, and you are thinking of the third. I said, I want you to know and recognize deeply that the doubt is there, and you are repressing it. Why you want to repress the doubt in the first place? Because you don't want to risk inquiry. Inquiry is a risk. It is moving into the unknown. One knows not what is going to happen. One leaves everything that one is acquainted with, is comfortable with, and one moves into the unknown, not even perfectly certain whether there is anything on the other shore, or whether there is the other shore even. So people cling either to theism, those who are a little stronger, intellectual, intelligentsia, they cling to atheism. But both are escapes from the doubt. And to escape from doubt is to escape from inquiry. Because what is doubt? It is only a question mark. It is not your enemy. It is simply a question mark within you which prepares you to inquire. Doubt is your friend. And I had talked about the third category, the agnostic. The theist is the most weaker of the three. Less cultured, less educated, less intellectual. Just a mediocre person. The second category, atheist, is more intellectual, more cultured. And tries hard not to be bothered by the question and puts the question absolutely away as far as he is concerned by arguing that there is no God. If an atheist and theist discuss and debate, the atheist is bound to win always. The theist cannot win. His arguments are poor. He is not argumentative. His belief is very simple. But the atheist is more complex. He has also a belief. His belief is that there is no God. You can call it unbelief, non-belief, but it is a belief. He fights for it with the same fanatic attitude as the theist. You discuss with any communist, all communists are atheists, and they have that same fanatic attitude as any theist. The agnostic is the most superior out of the three. The agnostic says, I have no grounds to say yes, I have no grounds to say no. Hence, I will keep my mouth shut about God. Ludwig Wittgenstein, a disciple of Bertrand Russell. Bertrand Russell is one of the significant agnostics of this age. And Ludwig Wittgenstein is his best disciple. Russell has praised Wittgenstein so generously that it rarely happens from a teacher's mouth to praise a disciple, a student. Wittgenstein was just a student in Russell's philosophy class. Russell was teaching philosophy in the University of Cambridge, and Wittgenstein was just a student. But Russell has the penetrating eyes to find if there is something. And Wittgenstein was something of a genius. Wittgenstein showed him his notes. And Russell said, publish it. Just his notes that he was taking in the class, any idea that was occurring to him, just his notes. And Russell said, you publish it. It is far more superior than any of my books. And I will never get such a student like you. And I am proud, and I am fulfilled in a certain sense that you came to my class. Wittgenstein has not written much, just 2-3 books, and those are all maxims. Small sentences. One sentence says, you should not speak about something that you know not, either for or against. One should be silent if one has not a solid yes or no in his experience. Another passage he says, there are things which cannot be spoken of. Hence, you should resist the temptation to speak about them. The agnostic is the most superior. He does not commit. He remains uncommitted. It is better to remain uncommitted because that keeps you alert that you have not started the search yet. The theist has arrived at a conclusion. The atheist has arrived at a conclusion. You have not even begun the search. The agnostic is the best out of the three. Comes closer to me. The theist is the farthest from me. Atheist a little closer. Agnostic very closer. But you can remain there. There is no necessity that you will move into the inquiry. You can say it is an ultimate question. That's what agnostics say. Whenever the question is ultimate, you cannot say yes or no about it. But his silence is not the silence of a Gnostic. I had not included Gnostic in the three categories I discussed knowingly. The word agnostic comes from the word Gnostic. Agnostic means one who declares that I am not certain this way or that. Who is Gnostic? Gnostic is one who knows. That is the meaning of Gnostic, the knower. The agnostic is silent because he does not know what is right and what is wrong, what is yes, what is no. The Gnostic is also silent because he has come to experience a reality which is inexpressible. I am a Gnostic. And I would like you all to be Gnostics. To come to a point of experience where things beyond words happen. Where language is left far away back, light years back, where there is no possibility to conceptualize your experience. You cannot say God is, you cannot say God is not. You cannot say that I cannot say these things. You You can be simply silent. And those who can understand silence will understand the answer. You can help people, that's what Gnostics can do. You can help people to come to silence. Call it meditativeness, awareness. Those are just names. But the essential quality is absolute silence. Nothing is stirring in you. Nothing wavering in you. And in that state, godliness is it is all over the place. It is within you, without you. So I had left the category Gnostic knowingly, because Gnostic cannot be put with the other three categories. He is a totally different person. He knows these three know not. One believes as if he knows. One believes as if he knows not. He knows that God does not exist. One knows certainly that he is not in a position to say yes or no. But all the three are ignorant. The Gnostic knows. But because he knows, he is in a difficulty, which only a knower can be. He cannot accept any category, because all categories false are. Even to say God is not enough. It does not cover the whole experience of godliness. To say God is not, that too is not enough. Because certainly there is no person, so you can say God is not. But there is such a presence. The person is not, but such a tremendous presence, that who cares for the person? And the presence is infinite, eternal. Once tasted, it is going to remain with you forever. The Gnostic is the really religious man.
If there is no God, what is prayer?
Prayer is a byproduct of theism. You start with a belief in God, then naturally some kind of relationship between you and God is needed. That is prayer. You start praising Him. Of course, there is some motivation. You are asking something through your prayer. Your prayer is not just a pure love affair. No. It is business. Hence, when you are in trouble, you pray. When you are out of trouble, you forget it. When you are in some difficulty, incapable to manage, you pray because you need God's help. The moment you are out of difficulty, you forget God and prayer both. A famous Sufi story is that a Sikh is coming back to its home country. Suddenly, the ocean goes mad, great winds. And the ship is almost on the verge of sinking. Everybody starts praying. At such a moment, who will not pray? Even the atheist will pray. The agnostic will pray and pray that forgive what I have been telling. It was all nonsense. Forgive me. But let me reach the shore. But the Sufi was simply sitting there, not praying. The people became angry. They said, you are a religious man, wearing the robe, green robe of a Sufi. What kind of a Sufi you are? You should have been the first to pray. And we are not religious people, we are just business people, and to us this prayer is too nothing but business. We are offering God that we will give you this, we will give you that, just save us. Why you are sitting silently? Why you are not praying? He said, you have already said it, because I am not a businessman. If he wants to finish us all good, if he wants to save, good. I am in total agreement with him. Why should I pray? For what? Prayer means some disagreement. Something is happening which you don't want to happen. You want God to intercede, to interfere, to stop it, to change it. The Sufi said, but I have no business of my own. It is his business to bother whether to save or to drown. If he wants this Sufi to be saved, It is his business, not my business. And if he wants me to die, that is his business. I had not asked for birth. Suddenly I was here. I cannot ask about death. If birth is not in my control, how death can be in my control? Those people thought this man is mad. They said, we will take care of you later on. Just let us get to the shore somehow and then we will take care of you. You are not a Sufi, you are not religious, you are a very dangerous man. But this is not time to bother and quarrel with you. And this was the most wealthiest, famous man of the country. And he was coming with millions of diamonds and precious stones. He has earned much. He had a beautiful palace in the town. The most beautiful marble palace. Even the king was jealous. Even the king had asked him many times, you give this palace to me. Any price and I will pay for it. But the man said, that is not possible. That palace is my pride. When the ship was almost sinking, the man shouted to God, listen, I give that palace to you. Just save me. And as it happened, the winds disappeared, the ocean became calm, the ship saved. They reached to the bank. Now, the rich man was in very difficult position. What he has said, and he was angry with the Sufi. Now he was not angry. He said, perhaps you were right, just to keep quiet. If I had followed you, I would not have lost my palace. But I am a businessman and I will find a way. And he found a way. Next day, he put the palace on auction. Informed all the nearby kingdoms, whoever is interested. Many kings and queens and rich people came. Everybody was interested. They were all puzzled to see that just in front of the palace, there was a cat chained by marble pillar of the palace. The rich man came out and he said, this palace and the cat both are on auction together. The price of the cat is 1 million dinars. There, dollars, $1 million, and the price of the cat, $1 million, and the price of the palace, $1. $1 million, $1. The people said, for this cat, $1 million? And for this palace, just $1? The businessman said, you don't bother about If you are interested, both are going to be sold together. Less I will not accept. If anybody is interested, this is my minimum price. The king of the country said, yes, I give you the price, but please tell me, what is the secret of this cat and the palace? And he said, no secret, just I got into trouble because of a prayer. I have told God that I will give you the palace. And I am a businessman. If he is a businessman, I am also a businessman. Cat, $1 million, that I will keep. And the palace, $1, that will go to God's fund. Prayer. It's just your effort to persuade God to do things according to you. And it is absolutely your imagination. In the first place, you don't know God. You don't know His likes and dislikes. You don't know whether He exists or not. And you are praying. This is a poor state of affairs. And this is happening all over the world. I am against prayer. Because it is basically business. It is bribing God. It is hoping that you can buttress His ego, that you are great, that you are compassionate, that you can do anything you want. And all this is being said because you want something. There is a motivation behind it. Otherwise, you will not pray if there is no motivation. I am against